Chapter 21. The world-famous marine historian and gourmand, St. Julian Perlmutter, was in an agony of ecstasy. He sat outside a 300-year-old Tuscan villa whose shaded terrace had a breathtaking view of rolling vineyards. Visible in the distance, dominating the Renaissance city of Florence, was the Duomo. The wide oak table before him groaned with Italian dishes, from pungent sausage made locally to a thick, rare beefsteak Florentine. There was so much wonderful food and so many wonderful colors and fragrances, in fact, that he was having a hard time trying to decide where to start. "Get a grip on yourself, old man," he muttered, stroking his gray beard as he stared at the spread. "Wouldn't do to starve to death amid all this plenty." At 400 pounds, Perlmutter was in little danger of wasting away. Since arriving in Italy 10 days before, he had eaten his way up the Italian boot on a promotional tour for an Italian-American food magazine. He had trudged through wineries, trattorias, and smokehouses, posed for photo opportunities in refrigerator rooms full of hanging prosciutto, and delivered lectures on the history of food going back to the Etruscans. He had dined on sumptuous feasts everywhere he stopped. The sensory overload had brought him to his present impasse. The cell phone in his suit pocket trilled. Grateful for the distraction from his quandary, he flipped the phone open. "State your business in a concise and businesslike manner." "You're a hard man to find, St. Julian." The sky-blue eyes and the ruddy face danced with pleasure at the sound of the familiar voice of Kurt Austin. "To the contrary, Kurt, my lad, I'm like Hansel and Gretel. Follow the food crumbs and you'll find me nibbling at the gingerbread house." "It was easier to follow the suggestion of your housekeeper. She told me you were in Italy. How's the tour going?" Perlmutter patted his substantial stomach. "Is very fulfilling, to say the least. All goes well in the District of Columbia, I trust?" "As far as I know, I just flew back from Copenhagen last night." "Ah, the city of Hans Christian Andersen and the Little Mermaid. I remember when I was there some years ago, there was this restaurant I dined at." Austin cut Perlmutter off before he launched into a course-by-course account of his meal. "I'd love to hear about it. But right now, I need your historical expertise." "Always willing to talk about food or history. Fire away." Perlmutter was often asked to lend his expertise to Numa queries. "Have you ever come across a Basque mariner by the name of Diego Aguirre's? 15th or 16th century?" Perlmutter dug into his encyclopedic mind. Yes. Something to do with the Song of Roland, the epic French poem. Chanson de Roland? I struggled through that as part of a high school French course." "Then you know the legend. Roland was the nephew of the Emperor Charlemagne. He held off the Saracens at Roncesvalles with the help of his magic sword Durendal. As he was dying, Roland beat his sword against a rock to keep it out of the hands of his enemies, but it wouldn't break. He blew his horn to summon help. Charlemagne, hearing it, came with his armies, but it was too late. Roland was dead. Through the centuries, Roland became a Basque hero, a symbol of their stubborn character." "How do we get from Roland to Aguirre's?" "I recall a reference to the Aguirre's family in an 18th-century treatise on pre-Columbian voyages to the Americas. Aguirre's was said to have made many fishing trips to North American waters decades before Columbus's voyage. Unfortunately, he ran afoul of the Spanish Inquisition. There were unverified reports he had been entrusted with the Roland relics." "From what you say, the Roland story was not just a legend. The sword and the horn actually existed." "The Inquisition apparently thought so. They feared the relics could be used to rally the Basques." "What happened to Aguirre's and the relics?" "They both disappeared. There is no record of a shipwreck that I can recall. May I ask what prompts your interest in the subject? I met a descendant of Diego Aguirre's. He's retracing the voyage of his long-lost ancestor, but he never said anything about sacred relics. I'm not surprised. Basque separatists are still setting off bombs in Spain. Lord knows what would happen if they got their hands on potent symbols like this. Do you remember anything else about Aguirre's? Not off the top of my head. I'll dig around in my books when I get home. Perlmutter owned one of the world's finest marine libraries. I'll be back in Georgetown in a few days, after a stop-off in Milan. You've been a great help, as usual. We'll talk again. Buon appetito. Grazie, Perlmutter said, clicking off his phone. He turned his attention back to the table. He was about to dig into a plate of marinated artichoke hearts when his host, who owned the villa and the surrounding vineyards, came in with the bottle of wine he had gone for. Shock registered on the man's face. You're not touching your food. Are you ill? Oh, no, Senor Nocci. I was distracted by a telephone call regarding a question of a historical nature. The silver-haired Italian nodded. Perhaps a taste of the cinghiale, the wild boar, will help your memory. The sauce was made from truffles found in my woods. A splendid suggestion, my friend. With the dam breached, Perlmutter dug into the food with his usual gusto. Nocci politely held his curiosity at bay while his guest devoured the repast. But when Perlmutter dabbed his small mouth and set his napkin aside, Nocci said, I am an amateur historian. It is impossible not to be when one lives in a country surrounded by the remnants of countless civilizations. Perhaps I can help you with your question. Perlmutter poured himself another glass of 1997 Chianti and recounted his conversation with Austin. The Italian cocked his head. I know nothing about this Basque, but your story brings to mind something I came across while doing some research in the Biblioteca Laurentiana. I visited the Laurentian Library many years ago. I was fascinated by the manuscripts. More than 10,000 masterpieces, Nocci said, nodding his head. As you know, the library was founded by the Medici family to house their priceless collection of papers. I have been writing a paper on Lorenzo the Magnificent, which I hope to publish someday, although I doubt if anyone will read it. Be assured, I shall read it, Perlmutter said grandly. Then it will have been worth my labor, Nocci said. Anyway, one of the hazards of research is the temptation to wander away from the highway, and while I was at the library, I traveled a side road that led to the Medici Pope Leo X. With the death of King Ferdinand in 1516, his 17-year-old successor, Charles V, encountered pressure to restrict the power of the Inquisition. In the great humanist tradition of the Medici family, Leo favored curtailing the inquisitors. But Charles's advisors persuaded the young king that the Inquisition was essential to maintain his rule, and the persecution continued another 300 years. A sad chapter in human history. It's comforting to know that Aguirre's had the courage to speak out. But the dark forces are strong. And none was darker than a Spaniard named Martinez. He sent a letter to the king urging him to support the Inquisition and expand its powers. As far as I can determine, the letter was forwarded to Leo for his comment and came to the library with the Pope's other papers. He shook his head. It is the fanatical raving of a monster. Martinez hated the Basques, wanted them wiped from the face of the earth. I remember there was a mention of Roland, which I recall thinking was unusual in this context. What was the nature of this reference? Nochi heaved a great sigh and tapped his head with his forefinger. I can't remember. One of the consequences of growing old. Perhaps you'll remember after more wine. I trust the wine more than my memory, Nochi said with a smile. The assistant curator at the library is a friend of mine. Please relax, and I will make a telephone call. He was back in a few minutes. She says she would be happy to produce the letter I mentioned for us any time we want to look at it. Perlmutter pushed his great bulk back from the table and rose to his feet. I think perhaps a little exercise would do me some good. The trip to Florence took less than 15 minutes. Nochi usually drove a Fiat, but in expectation of Perlmutter's visit, he had leased a Mercedes, which more comfortably accommodated his guest's wide girth. They parked near the leather and souvenir stalls that abounded in the Piazza San Lorenzo and went through an entrance to the left of the Medici family's old parish chapel. Passing into the quiet cloisters, they left the bustle of commerce behind them and climbed the Michelangelo stairs into the reading room. The sturdy frame that supported Perlmutter's large figure allowed more agility than would have seemed possible under the laws of gravity. Still, he was puffing from the exertion of climbing the staircase and gladly agreed when Nochi said he would fetch his friend. Perlmutter strolled past the rows of carved, straight-backed benches, basking in the light filtering through the high windows as he breathed in the musty odor of antiquity. Nochi returned after a minute with a handsome, middle-aged woman whom he introduced as Mara Maggi, the assistant curator. She had the reddish-blonde hair and fair Florentine complexion that showed up so often in Botticelli paintings. Perlmutter shook her hand. Thank you for seeing us on such short notice, Signora Maggi. She greeted Perlmutter with a radiant smile. Not at all. It is a pleasure to open our collection to someone of such repute. Please, come with me. The letter you wish to see is in my office. She led the way to a space whose window overlooked the cloister garden and settled Perlmutter in a small anteroom that had a spare desk and a couple of chairs. Several pages of wrinkled parchment lay in an open, vellum-bound wooden box. She left the two men alone and said to call if they needed any help. Nochi gingerly lifted the first parchment page from the folder and held it by the edges. My Spanish is not too bad. If you'll allow me. Perlmutter nodded, and Nochi began to read. As he listened, Perlmutter decided that he had seldom heard writing that dripped with so much venom and bloodthirsty hatred. The diatribe was a litany of charges directed at the Basques, witchcraft and Satanism among them. Even the uniqueness of their language was used in evidence. Martinez was obviously a madman. But behind his ravings was a clever political message to the young Medici king that to restrict the Inquisition would diminish the power of the throne. Ah, Nochi said, adjusting his reading glasses. Here is the passage I was telling you about. Martinez writes, but it is their tendency to rebellion I fear the most. They are attached to relics. They have the sword and the horn, to which they attribute great powers. It gives them the power to rebel, which will threaten the authority of the church and of your kingdom, my lord. There is one among them, a man called Aguirres, who is at the heart of this sedition. I have vowed to pursue him to the ends of the earth, to reclaim these relics. Sire, if our sacred mission is not allowed to continue its work until heresy is uprooted from the land, I fear the call of Roland's horn will summon our enemies to battle and that his blade will lay waste to all we hold dear. Interesting, Perlmutter said, knitting his brow. First of all, he seems to be saying that the relics are real, and second, that this fellow Aguirre has them in his possession. This certainly backs up the legendary accounts of Roland's fall. Signora Maggi poked her head in the door and asked if they needed anything. Nochi thanked her and said, This is a fascinating document. Do you have any more papers authored by this man Martinez? I'm very sorry, but there is nothing I can think of. Perlmutter tented his fingers and said, Martinez comes across in his writings as a man of great ego. I would be surprised if he did not keep a journal of his day-to-day activities. It would be wonderful if such a book existed and we could get our hands on it. Perhaps at the State Archives in Seville. Signora Maggi was only half listening. She was reading a sheet of paper that had been tucked into the box with the other records. This is a list of all of the manuscripts in this box. Apparently, one of the documents was taken from this file by a previous curator and sent on to the Venice State Archive. What sort of document? Perlmutter asked. It is described here as an exoneration of a man of the sea, written by an Englishman, Captain Richard Blackthorne. It was supposed to be returned, but there are more than 90 kilometers of archives covering 1,000 years of history, so sometimes things fall through the cracks, as you Americans say. I'd love to read Blackthorne's account, Perlmutter said. I'm due in Milan tomorrow, but perhaps I can divert to Venice. Perhaps it won't be necessary. She took the file into her office, and they could hear the soft clicking of a computer keyboard. She reappeared after a moment. I have contacted the Venice State Archives and asked for a virtual search of the records. Once the document is found, it can be copied and transmitted through the Internet. Well done, Perlmutter said, and my heartfelt thanks. Signora Maggi kissed Perlmutter on both fleshy cheeks, and before long he and Nochi were driving through the suburbs of Florence. Exhausted by the activities of the day, Perlmutter took a nap and awoke just in time for dinner. He and Nochi dined on the terrace. He had regained his gustatory equilibrium and had no trouble downing his veal and pasta dishes. After finishing up with a spinach salad and a simple dolce of fresh fruit, they watched the sun go down, silently sipping on glasses of limoncello. The phone rang and Nochi went to answer it while Perlmutter sat in the dark, savoring the smell of earth and grapevines, carried to his tulip nose by a light evening breeze. Nochi appeared a few minutes later and summoned Perlmutter into a small, state-of-the-art computer room. Noting his guest's upraised eyebrow, Nochi said, Even the business as small as mine must use the latest in communications in order to survive in the global market. That was Signora Maggi, he said, sitting down in front of the monitor. She apologizes for the delay, but the document you requested had to be retrieved from the Museo Storico Navale, the naval museum where it had been languishing. Here, he said, and rose to give up his seat. The sturdy wooden chair creaked in protest when Perlmutter settled in. He scanned the title page on which the author declared the journal to be an account of an unwilling mercenary in the service of the Spanish Inquisition. Perlmutter leaned forward, stared into the screen, and began to read the words that had been written 5 centuries before.